Ethics and Accountability will come to order. Will the clerk please call the roll? Total of 8 members answering the roll. Quorum is present. We'll proceed with our business. Item 2 on the agenda, an update on the State Employees Group Insurance Program. I think we're all well aware of how certain issues have been in legal abeyance, and perhaps there's a prospect that that might change this morning. With that introduction, I'd like to call on Director Hamos to come forward and her team.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. I'm Julie Hamos, Director of the Department of Healthcare and Family Services. To my right is our General Counsel, Jeanette Bedroff. To my left is Colin Brewer, who's the Acting Administrator of the Group Health Insurance Program. We have with us Janice Monneville, she has some fancy title at CMS, but she certainly is the head of the whole benefits program for our group plans.
We can't afford to pay her what she's really worth in the marketplace.
That's what we feel about all these people.
So the fancier the title, the better.
I'm glad, sir, that you said you can't afford to pay me what I'm worth as opposed to what you're paying me. I appreciate that, sir.
And we also have Matt Brown, who is the Chief Procurement Officer. I think you know that we've had this.
Pardon me, please add Representative Riley to the roll.
We've been dealing with this issue for a long time now. Since last summer, at some point last summer, you authorized us to enter into emergency contracts for continuing to provide services to our group health insurance plans. The only contract we currently have signed and in place right now is with the Blue Cross plans, the two Blue Cross plans that provide for services in some of the counties. All the rest of the plans are under emergency contracts, which would expire actually this coming year, June 30th.
Correct.
So we've also had a lawsuit pending that I think all of the vendors have been part of. And in looking ahead to try to resolve this in a way that really would work as well as possible for our members, the state employees, retirees, teachers, et cetera, we developed a proposal under the leadership of the Attorney General's office that would allow us to settle the lawsuit and proceed to enter into some contracts and to move ahead with a new supplemental RFP that would provide managed care fully insured coverage for what we would call downstate Illinois, the parts of Illinois that are outside of 6 counties in the Northeast Illinois area. So as part of that lawsuit settlement, we would be issuing a supplemental RFP, but as an essential feature of that lawsuit settlement, we are here before you today to ask for your authority to have us enter into contracts with the two open access plan vendors who have been providing services under the emergency contract. This would allow us to enter into contracts and make the award and enter into full long-term contracts with them, and that's why we are here before you today. And with that, I will see if you have any questions.
Questions, members of the commission? Any questions? Representative Bellick.
So thank you very much for all your work. So can you please, this is going to allow managed care contracts, is that correct, when they weren't offered before in the last?
So we already have a fully insured managed care contract signed with Blue Cross, and that provides for certain parts of the state. This would provide for an additional one or more vendors to provide fully insured managed care services in the other parts of the state. It's a procurement. We don't know. There's no guarantee that anyone will get the award, of course. And we are proceeding as though most of the state could have fully insured managed care services, depending on the kind of the receipt of the bids that we receive.
And when will these be offered?
Well, we would like to move ahead with posting of that supplemental RFP, we hope, in the next few weeks. What we're hoping very much for is to be able to catch this up to this cycle that would allow for the open enrollment period that we have with our public employees in May. So if all goes well and smoothly, it's possible that there would be additional awards by May.
Thank you.
Please add Senator Severson to the roll. Could someone please provide a little more detail on the parameters of the proposed settlement? And as part of that, could you underscore the role that the commission plays on making this potential settlement happen?
Thank you. This is Jeanette Badgeoff. I'm General Counsel with the Department of Healthcare and Family Services. And as a first step of the settlement agreement, the department had to post draft excerpts of a potential supplemental RFP. We posted those draft excerpts on January 13th of this year. We received comments, and we reviewed those comments and unilaterally determined the scope of the RFP, which basically outlines that the counties included in this supplemental RFP, again, it's a fully insured HMO, would be those counties outside Cook, Kane, Lake, DuPage, Kendall, and McHenry County. We're not agreeing to any award, and it'll be an open, competitive RFP that any entity who has an interest in can bid upon. The next step after the scope was determined and accepted by all the parties was for the department to ask for this hearing to for permission to from CAGWA to operate a self-insured program. We believe that this is necessary in order for us to execute those OAP contracts that were the subject of the fiscal year 2011 OAP award. And those contracts would be for the remaining term left in this fiscal year's plus 4 years, plus any potential renewals that we would enter into. If CAGWA does provide that approval, then under the settlement, the department has within 60 days to post the supplemental RFP. After posting of the RFP, then the parties make a joint motion to the court to dismiss the lawsuit, lifting the stay that was entered by the trial court, barring the state from entering into and executing the OAP contracts. Once that stay is lifted, all the parties, the necessary parties, would execute the contracts, and then the lawsuit would be dismissed.
So if the commission fails to authorize the steps that you've just outlined, the settlement agreement that's been negotiated by the Attorney General with all the parties would be void. Is that correct?
Correct, barring any new agreements, yes.
Very good. I have one other question, that is, in the initial presentations regarding this contract, it was anticipated that the state could achieve a savings of $1 billion roughly over a 10-year period, or $100 million a year. Can we put a price tag on what this exercise has cost us in terms of potential savings for this year?
This is Colin Brewer, Division Administrator for Healthcare Purchasing. I have performed an initial analysis of our enrollment through the first and second enrollment periods that we had during May and June of last year, and then again in November of this fiscal year. And the costs associated with the current managed care vendors that we have in place, to me, looks as if we are really at about a break-even point compared to the original estimates that we'd given out. So virtually all of the $100 million of savings has evaporated.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any further questions? Senator Murphy.
This was going so well. What we had a conversation yesterday, and despite having numerous questions to that very point, I couldn't get an answer yesterday about the direction this is going and whether there are savings and what the numbers project based on the first 6 months. That was central to the conversation we had yesterday when we talked about lifting this at this meeting. I couldn't get that answer yesterday, but now, in the middle of this hearing, you tell us that actually the $102 million that you even acknowledged wasn't real last year is now completely evaporated, and somehow it's because of what happened between now and then? What do you base that on? And why couldn't you have told me that yesterday?
Well, I apologize. I didn't think that question specifically came up as to where we were with the $100 million savings.
So you didn't think that conversation came up. So what do you base your statement that the $102 million in savings that was projected last year, which, again, admissions were made wasn't real then, but what do you base that statement on that has evaporated?
I took a look at the enrollments of June from last year and where they are as of today, and the costs that were assumed for this fiscal year under the for all vendors that were in effect prior to any award that would have gone into place, and now where we're at with our current membership.
So you've done that evaluation on every single HMO and OAP, or just selected ones?
I did that on all of our programs for the State Employees Group Insurance Program.
And so yesterday when you were talking about analyses of the various OAPs and the various HMOs and the cost comparison of the two, you had said you didn't have the time to do the analysis on all of them, and you did the analysis on a selected one or two. Is that not the case anymore?
No, I did the analysis on the state employees plan as opposed to all four of them, which would include the retired teachers, the college, and the local government programs.
And you feel you can extrapolate from the one that you did based on the savings?
They seem to be valid numbers to me upon first look.
Well, I got to tell you, I feel a little blindsided right now after we went through this conversation at length and attempted to cover the very subject matter that you were just asked about now at a meeting, and I was told time and again that we don't really know that answer, and now you come in here today and give one that is completely self-serving. I've got a real problem with this. I am pretty concerned about this.
Representative Tryon.
I'll kind of follow up on the comment that you made. So let me see if I understand what you're saying right. Because we extended the existing contracts, then the savings that was anticipated wasn't there, correct? Is that basically what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay. And had we, the savings would have been $102 million. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. My problem in finding myself in this decision, Colin, was essentially that I think the first step in that process a year ago should have been to come to CAGFA and before when we have to indemnify the taxpayers of the state of Illinois. When we look at these insurance policies, it would seem to me that the first step on whether we were going to have an HMO versus an open access plan should have been determined prior to us even going to bid. I would think in the future, hopefully, that would be the step we would make 4 years from now is to start at COGFA and get that consensus before we make the decision we're going to get rid of an HMO or one of our offerings that doesn't have liability to the state. That, I mean, would that not be one of the things we've learned here?
You know, Representative Tryon, I think we're rehashing a lot of the same conversations we had all last spring. We've been in a spot where we've been caught up in a court case, where we've been trying to figure out the best way forward with our members to try to give them some assurances going forward, because we really have no ability to extend emergency contracts forever. So we were looking ahead to what are our members' goals and what do we need to do between now and a very short time frame between now and July. And that's what we're really here for, is to get your support for that. I mean, I'm sorry that, you know, Senator feels blindsided by this. What we did do is I asked Colm, and Colm performed a very good analysis of how the two OAP contracts were performing. We were never asked this question. We were, however, as interested as you in how the two OAP plans were performing, and we did do a very careful analysis of that, and that's what we've spent the last few days presenting to the senators. That's what we thought were some of the issues before that you had a right to ask about, and we had a right to look into too, and we wanted to.
Right.
And that's, you know, we're not looking at overall savings, we're looking at service to our members right now and how to move forward.
Just a comment, and I would hope that the goal in 4 years would be to avoid any of the conflicts that we had in this procurement cycle. I still feel that in the HMO offering, there certainly was a value to the fact that there was no extended risk to the state of Illinois taxpayers, okay?
And we are now offering a supplemental RFP
That's where I've come from the whole time frame, and
I bet
to me, if we're going to look in the future at getting rid of that, it shouldn't have to result in a court case. It should be something we make that decision here before, or in a different type of process than the one we had. So I'm not blaming this committee or anybody for there being a not the intended savings, because this did end up in court. I am saying that we should learn from this process and make sure that when we go through this again in 4 years, we're not going back through this same confusion. That's my comment. And it was led by Senator Schoenberg's comment. That's, put that on the record. Thank you.
Senator Severson.
And just a follow-up on the projected savings. If, for example, Health Alliance has stayed at the 011 number, which was the 453 number, how would there not have been savings if these individuals would have migrated to
Excuse me for a second, Senator. Do we all have what you have in front of you? I don't think that the rest of the members of COGFA were given those numbers.
Okay.
Is that? Did HFS provide the rest of COGFA members what you were just talking about and what Senator Severson has? Okay. So we have nothing to go off of. Thank you.
Okay. In this
I think I need to clarify. I must have misunderstood the question a little bit, because the analysis that I was talking about, I think, is what you're about to refer to, is under the awards from the previous RFP. And I think maybe the question was asked about the savings as it relates to where we actually are today. And so I think, as we discussed in the past, if you're using dollar amounts that were included in bids from last spring, and I think those were the numbers that I meant to say, not necessarily exactly where we are today.
So what we have saved, then we have saved money if under the emergency we kept at the 011 rates, those costs are a savings to us for this year. Because they kept at the 11 rates.
That is correct.
So there was a savings. So going through this exercise created a savings for us.
Yeah, I apologize for my misstatement.
Okay, thank you.
Excuse me. So just to get that on the record, what you just said, that there was a savings?
Is because of the fact that we entered into emergency contracts with certain fully insured vendors at fiscal 11 rates as opposed to what was included in the original April 6th bid, there were savings involved, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for indulging me. You won't have to do it much longer. Representative Poe.
Just quickly, and go back to the $102 million a year over 10 years. That's $1 billion. Was that a savings in real dollars, or was that a savings in projected raises in the premiums?
At the time the analysis was done, I would have believed that there were cost increases due to medical inflation included in
right.
the analysis.
So basically, when you were talking about that $100 million a year, that was probably $100 million of projections where it could go that you were going to save.
That is true, yes.
Could the clerk please add Representative Nekritz to the roll? Are there any further questions or comments? Mr. Brown, would you like to add anything?
Thank you, Mr. and Madam Co-Chairs and members of the committee. The only thing I'm able to add at this point is, as being part of the lawsuit and the settlement agreement, is the anticipated outcome to be a solicitation for HMOs. That solicitation has yet to be created. It is a work product that is forthcoming that needs to be put forward in 60 days after this commission makes a determination if that is favorable to the process. And we look forward to a competition where the insurance companies can put their best foot forward and compete.
Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Murphy. Senator Murphy, I'm sorry. Senator Frerix with a question.
I know the RFP is not, the solicitation is not ready. Do you have any idea how long it would take, just so we can sort of back in and see if we can have something in place before contracts end, before the open enrollment
Well, please
period.
Don't ask Mr. Brown that, because okay. we have to write it.
Yeah, that would be my
he
answer.
Would like, I need he to would like to have it tomorrow. And you heard that.
Well, I think many of us would like that. So would,
yeah. Yes, I agree with that. Think? As part of the settlement agreement, you heard a 60-day period, but my goal would be that we would be able to get this out much quicker, because we are very mindful of that open enrollment period and catching up with that, and that would make a very smooth transition, if there are any awards, very smooth transition for our members. So we don't want to really commit to that, but I am cracking the whip, as okay. they say, to get it out.
Not defer to the agency's pace at that.
Senator Murphy, you had a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Representative Nekritz. Discussion on the motion. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, the clerk will please call the roll.
I would just like to say that in addition to the point made by Representative Tryon, I would also hope that that one of the lessons learned from this is that we need to respect the procurement process that's been put into law by the General Assembly, and I vote aye.
total of 11 members voting yes, none voting no, none voting present. The motion regarding self-insurance carries. Is there another motion? Representative Nekritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I make a motion pursuant to 5 ILCS 375/5 and to the extent it is statutorily required that the commission authorize the executive director to waive the 30-day contract review period in accordance with the written request from the Department of Health Care and Family Services.
Thank you. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Schmidt. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will please call the roll. Aye.
Senator Severson?
Aye.
Senator Slaughter?
Aye.
Representative Toyo?
Aye.
A total of 11 voting yes, none voting no, none voting present. The motion carries.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Pardon me, Representative Poe, you had a question?
Yeah, for the committee. We're going to go through this process, and do they come back here with the results before they award the contract to COCFA, or is this given information just to move forward and we won't have any more meetings?
I think the answer is we get provided with copies of the contracts and that we're updated, but that they're not necessarily required to come before. We don't have to approve them. Yes. Yes, that would be the procurement process, and we're not involved in that.
What? Like last year.
Correct. Okay. If someone could tell the Attorney General that we're good to go, that would be great. Thank you very much for your time and your effort. I'd like to now turn the chair over to Representative Belek.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to agenda number 3. The 2013 economic forecast and revenue estimate. Edward Boss. Please proceed.
Here? Oh, okay. We're going to use the handout, and what I'm going to do this morning is sort of give an overall view of where the economy is, a little bit about how Illinois fits into that picture, and then we'll get into Jim as to the impact that this kind of economic climate will have on state revenues. To start with, on page 3, which are national numbers, we see the change in real gross domestic product for the United States. And you can see that in the first quarter of 2010 was the first.
Excuse me, which document are you on?
Page 4.
Thanks.
That coincided with the beginning of the economic expansion that started in June of 2009. So we've really had 2.5 years of expansion right now. I know it doesn't always seem that way, but we have. We had a soft spot in the economy and threats of a double-dip recession last summer. Since then, the economy has picked up a little improvement. However, this is far below what normally would occur after this length of economic expansion. This is the weakest expansion we've seen in the worst in the post-World War II period. Of course, that's coming off of the worst recession we saw in the post-World War II period. Well, what's keeping this growth being so lethargic? It's, of course, 70% of this growth is the consumer. So if you look at chart 2, you can see that consumer confidence remains fairly low after 2.5 years of economic recovery. We're far below where we were before the recession began. This morning, we got a number which looked a little encouraging. The Conference Board came out with their index which rose, bumped up to 70.8, which is the highest in the year for that measure. So some of the economic news coming out recently has been improving. However, as you can see from this chart, we're well below where we were prior to the last recession. So things still are fairly lethargic. And why? If you turn to the next chart, one of the big factors, of course, has been home prices. This is the largest asset of most people. Home prices have been severely depressed. Today we got some more news on home prices, which over the last year are down 34%. Steepest declines in the four cities, one being Chicago. Home prices at best are leveling out, at worst are still continuing to decline. And of course, this has been a major factor in depressing improvement in consumer attitudes. Now, are we about to look? A lot of prognosticators are saying, well, the worst in housing is behind us, and things are only going to get better. Some of the housing stocks have done better, but it's really hard to get evidence at this point that this turnaround is here. For example, before you can start a new housing start, you have to have a permit. So in the next chart, chart four, I'm just looking at Illinois single-family housing permits. Now, total permits may have looked a little better, because if there is any improvement at all in housing activity, it's been in the multifamily unit, basically people going from having a home to renting. Here you can see that at best we've reached the bottom and leveling out. There certainly is no sign here that we're up for any near-term sharp pickup in housing. Yes, sir.
This is true, but isn't this also driven, though, by the fact that, you know, there was a housing glut, so we can't build if you have an overabundance?
Definitely, and that is starting to come down, which is one of the positive indicators we're looking at. But I don't think we're in for any sharp turnaround in the next year or two in housing. It's going to take a longer time to. I know I'm sitting here with, my mother passed away over 3 years ago. I still can't sell her condo, even at dramatically reduced prices. Another factor, of course, has been the volatility, keeping depressing consumer attitudes, is the volatility we've seen in people's 401ks. Now, September of last year lived up to its reputation. It turned out to be the worst month of the year in stock prices. Since then, however, equity prices are back to the level they were before then. Although, when you look in retrospect, we're still 9% or so below, just looking at the Dow Jones average, from where we were before the recession began. So while there's been an improvement in the equity markets, it still isn't one where, and there's a lot of people saying that, you know, we could hit another soft spot this summer with gasoline prices going up, et cetera, et cetera. So the next chart shows consumer prices. There doesn't seem to be much inflation going on. The Fed has come out and said, we're not going to change key interest rates out till 2014. You look at prices, they look relatively calm. On total consumer prices, the latest month was up 2.9% from a year ago, which isn't bad. The core rate, however, which takes out the volatile food and energy prices, which is where a lot of the inflation has been recently, is starting to creep up. And that's somewhat of a concern. I don't think it's a near-term concern, because the Fed has committed to keeping interest rates low, with unemployment being so high, with the housing problems still in front of us, et cetera. The problem is the Fed usually overstays this period and then has to correct later on. I don't think it's a near-term problem, but it is one that is worth keeping an eye on if this upward trend, particularly in the core rate, continues. What about the business sector? We talked about the consumer, that's 70% recently of total growth. Now let's turn to the business sector. Here we see that the Purchasing Managers Index, and the way to read this, if more than 50% say that things are improving, it's considered an expansion. And we have had an expansion now for 29 consecutive months. There was a weakening again even in this sector during the summer months, but there's been a little improvement in the last 2 or 3 months. However, this morning, again, you can't put a lot of emphasis on 1 month's data, but this morning we got out the durable goods report, which showed a drop the largest in 3 years. And while this is a very volatile series, it was because the demand for capital equipment shrunk. So, you know, this is something that's worth watching. 1 month is not a trend make, and the business sector has been an important reason why we've had even modest growth. And, of course, that reflects what's been happening to corporate profits, which have been up very strongly, too. Most of the U.S. economy, at least until recently, has been in the non-manufacturing or service sector, if you look at chart 8. Here again, we saw a soft spot this summer with this index coming down. Recently, we've seen a bounce back a little from that decline, so that in February, we now are back to where we were about a year ago. So this sector, which is a very important sector because it's a large growing part of the U.S. economy, is doing somewhat better. The one area which has shown outstanding growth throughout this economic recovery is shown on the next chart, chart 9, which is Illinois exports. You can see the dramatic drop we took during the recession in Illinois exports. Then we have a very rapid turnaround. We're at new record highs now. Although even here, you see in the last 3 or 4 months, that's sort of leveling out a little. Part of this may be having to do with 20% of all U.S. exports go to Europe. Europe is either in a recession or going into a recession, so that may temper somewhat the growth we've seen up till now in overall exports. But it's been a very important strength thus far in this recovery. Yes, sir. Most of this is manufactured, but it also includes food. And it's measured from where it originates, not where it's sent from. Otherwise, you'd have New Orleans and the ports there. When you have a lethargic recovery like we have been having for 2.5 years, of course, it has an impact on the most critical problem in the economy, and that's in the labor markets. Now, chart 10 shows you Illinois' employment picture. This is all going to probably change on March 1st. When the new benchmark data is released by the Department of Employment Security. I assume that they'll look a little better than this, only based on the fact that the national numbers looked a little better than this. But Illinois is still lagging. For example, in the prior recession in 2001, by 2005, the nation had recouped all the jobs lost during that recession. That's not true this time. Not only did not Illinois not recoup all the jobs it had in the prior recession, before this recession began, we've lost even more. Now, it has come up somewhat recently, but the gap seems to be growing somewhat between the nation and Illinois. And that shows up in the unemployment rate again, which is delayed and won't be out until March 1st. If you look towards Illinois, historically, has a tendency to be slightly above the national average. There was a period here in 2010 where we either matched or were slightly below the national average. That gap, however, between the two seems to have widened. In January, the national number was 8.3%. We only have December's, like I said, ours won't be out until March 1st, we had 9.8. So there's a 1.5% difference between the national and Illinois. Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to ask what you thought the reason for us lagging behind the national in the unemployment was in this graph.
I think there are several reasons. One is, I think you've all gotten the report, the independent report we had done by Moody's and MoodysEconomy.com and their analysis. Once a year, we ask them to look at Illinois' economy. Part of their conclusion is that when you rate Illinois as far as its business climate, that we have dropped in our rating compared with other states. So, and that is one of the features they bring up, is that, you know, we're not as competitive, according to that independent analysis, as we were. Part of it has to do with the tax increases. Others are, I don't want to get into politics, but that's what we ask for, independent look at it.
Well, yeah, because this is on the graph. It's not political as to the data that you're showing us. Thank you.
If you look at the economy, yes, sir.
You know, I seem to recall that when we've had similar presentations, that we've always acknowledged that Illinois enters into recessionary periods later than the rest of the country,
right,
and comes out later than the rest of the country, right?
That is true.
So for as long as I've been here, that's been the historical trend.
But so, usually doesn't take this long.
Right, it usually doesn't take this long, but it always does, but it always, there is
There's
always
been
a lag.
Tense. That's right.
Right? In the past, you've attributed that lag to the diversified nature of the state's economy, to the best you've been able to ascertain what that is. Do you still feel that that's the case?
I feel it's the case, but it's bothersome that we're going into a third year of economic recovery and that's still happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
States with large urban centers, I mean, we do lag.
Right.
States with large urban centers, we have a greater propensity to have people who are sort of chronic in a way. Because, for example, we're talking about don't want to get into politics.
And the other part is when you do get areas of chronic unemployment, people stop looking. And when they stop looking for work, they're not in the labor force. Therefore, as many observers point out, the actual unemployment rate is significantly higher than the reported unemployment rate.
Right. Anyway, thank you.
The next chart sort of came up several years ago is how do you judge the overall economy? Well, you look at the misery index. How miserable are you? And it's very simple. You just add the unemployment rate and the inflation rate together. And this shows where that rate is 11.2 in the latest month. Now, it's an improvement from where it's been. It got up to 12.6 at the worst part of the previous recession. But you can see on this chart, which has a little historical perspective, the last 10 years or so, that it's still very, very high, although heading in the right direction over the last couple of months. Finally, on the next chart, we have three forecasts giving us different alternatives done by Global Insight, one of the services that the commission uses. The first, or baseline projection, is their most likely outcome, which has the economy continuing to grow but at a very below par rate for this fiscal year and next. I might add that baseline, which this says has a 60% odds, just recently has been lowered to 55%. The good news is that they've upped the optimistic solution from only a 10% rate of growth to 20%. So they're getting a little more optimistic since they've seen some of the monthly data come out. And the pessimistic or double-dip recession, which had a 30%, actually going back to May, a 40% odds of occurring, are now down to 25%. Actually, if you want to look at some of the sectors, the next page shows a table of that baseline forecast. It would have total gross domestic product actually 1.8% growth in fiscal 2012. 2.1% in fiscal 13, and then 2.8% growth in 2014. So it is an improvement, but a slow improvement over the next few years. If you look at Illinois alone, and we go back to Global Insight, but this is on a calendar year basis, You can see that its employment growth, et cetera, is slower. In fact, probably the best line is that bottom line, the unemployment rate, to give you some difference. Even in 2014, they have the Illinois unemployment rate on average 9.2%. Now, it could be well below that by the end of that year. But that compares to rates which were, by 2014, on the baseline projection, would be below 8%. So it shows that their expectations is, since they did both of these numbers, that Illinois will continue to lag well over the next couple of years in the employment situation. Finally, before we get to Jim on state tax receipts, this is a survey, again, we use this number that International Strategy and Investment, they do a survey of guys like Jim, 16 different states as to how receipts are coming in when the people who are looking at receipts daily. And they do an index. The 16 states are widely diversified and they feel represents a good sample of the nation as a whole. And you can see the dramatic drop in state receipts that happened during the last recession. We came back very briskly. However, as you notice, the last 4 or 5 months, things seem to be leveling out and that we still remain well below the level of receipts that we were getting prior to the recession period that occurred. So we are seeing improved state receipts overall, but again, there's some concern that rate of growth seems to be leveling off here. And I'll turn it over to Jim unless there's any additional questions, or we can take questions at the end too.
All right, we'll get into the actual revenues here on page 20. I think the next two or three pages actually is a little review of how we performed last year in fiscal year 11, and I'll just briefly mention a few things. On page 21, it demonstrates where of the $3.398 billion in growth last fiscal year, where did that come from? Well, about 2.4 came to the tax, was due to the tax hike. About $1 billion from base growth of the big three, corporate, personal, and sales. Tax amnesty netted us around $300 million. The smaller other taxes actually fell somewhat, about $100 million. Net transfers were up nearly $300 million, in large part due to the interfund borrowing. And then federal sources fell about $500 million, in large part due to the ratcheting down of the increased federal match, as well as federal spending. The following page shows how our forecast that we presented in March of last year performed up against the actuals for 2011. And you can see the bottom line, we did pretty well. Talking about $30.5 billion, our forecast was only off $7 million. Thought we nailed the economic sources pretty well. Everybody overestimated federal sources. You can see the accompanying comparison with GOMB. Bottom line, they also did quite well, only a difference of $125 million, but their deviation was a little bit higher in most of the lines. But by and large, everybody had a pretty good idea of where fiscal year 11 was going, and that helped us then project for fiscal year 12 as far back as last March. Moving then to this current fiscal year on page 23, you'll see a month-by-month indicator, both with and without federal sources. Federal sources is so volatile that oftentimes we like to remove that from the equation. If you do include it, looking overall, we're up $1.684 billion in general funds through January. But if you exclude the $1.8 billion fall-off, overall growth is up a much better $3.47 billion. A more refined and detailed breakout of those lines are on the following page, on page 24. You can see personal income tax, not surprisingly, we're up about 65%. through the first 7 months of the year. Now, that, of course, will start to temper significantly as we start comparing against the same months that did have the tax increase. So don't expect the year to end in that type of growth. Corporate income tax, kind of the same thing. We're up considerably. Most of the corporate, though, will come in from this point on. Sales tax has done quite well, not only this fiscal year, but actually last fiscal year. We're up 5.9%. It's kind of a contrary to what Ed had, some of his charts. We talked about consumer confidence and that. What we're seeing in actual receipts shows that the consumer is still pretty engaged in the economy, buying large ticket items such as autos. The next noteworthy line, I guess, would be other transfers. You'll see that's off around 34%. Again, that's just a reflection of the interfund borrowing that took place last year that's not being repeated this year. And then, of course, the big fall off in federal sources, which, again, is due to the ratcheting back of the reimbursement rates as well as the actual federal spending in fiscal year 12. So, basically, we're where we thought we would be. That's reflected on the following page, on page 25, which shows what our new updated forecast is. You'll see that our February 12 estimate for this fiscal year is $33.392 billion, which is about $545 million less than what we thought back in July. However, if you look at it on a line-by-line basis, it's really all due to federal sources falling off considerably from when the budget was passed. State sources nets out a very small change, only $14 million. That's offset with a slight drop in transfers. As we compare with GOMB, the overall estimate is only different by about $171 million now. But as you can see, they have upped their state source estimate to be much closer to ours, growing almost $600 million from August. Their transfer number was also very similar, and they too, of course, had to reduce their federal source estimate. So by and large, estimates are quite close for fiscal year 12. $171 million is certainly a lot of money. No one's going to try to belittle that, but in the context of over $33 billion, it's less than one-half of 1%. The page 26 chart just gets into a little bit more detail as to the differences between the COGFA and GOMB's estimates. Really, the only point I'll make is the personal income tax estimate. While we are $200 million higher than GOMB, it really has nothing to do with the underlying growth rates assumed. Instead, it has to do with what we think the value of the timing of last year's tax increase will have on this year's final payment. If you recall, last January, receipts were only up 10%, even though the tax grew 66%. February was also under that amount, and I think even March a little bit. That should come back to us in final payments in March and April. We just have a slightly higher value of what we think that will be than GOMB, but the underlying growth rates are very similar. So that's it for fiscal year 12. I'll just quickly mention, when we compare our estimate with the House Resolution 110 of last year, this is on page 27, we anticipate exceeding that resolution by $219 million, which, according to House Resolution 158, could then be used to pay off overdue bills. Finally, moving ahead to fiscal year 13, on page 28, we just list some dot points, some of which Ed has already gone over, some of the things that will mitigate a return to good growth here in Illinois. One's going to be the European recession, which seems to be already going on or soon will. That should hold down exports. Also, the economic growth will be lacking due to the continued stubborn unemployment rates. The Fed Reserve is likely to hold interest rates low, and the federal government also has their own growing debt burden to deal with. While base revenue growth, and I'll get into that a little bit more in a second, is going to be in historical growth ranges. There's a couple of timing aspects that will serve to reduce overall growth. One I just mentioned was the timing aspect of the tax increase. It actually artificially increases 12. As a result, when you compare 13 against that 12, the growth rates are mitigated. Few non-economic sources are expected to return any meaningful gains in 13, and as we know, federal sources are always unpredictable, and they're dependent upon appropriations as well as cash available for those reimbursable spending. So chances are we're going to see continued growth in payment cycles moving ahead into fiscal year 13 as well. Unfortunately, all of the growth in revenues for next year will be eaten up by pension costs and then some. Next year, pensions are anticipated to cost over $1 billion more than they are in fiscal year 12, 5.9 versus 4.9. And that has, that's not even including the $8.5 billion in unpaid bills that the comptroller anticipates ending the fiscal year at. So despite modest growth in revenues, there's still a host of budgetary pressures and problems facing us in fiscal year 13. On page 29, you'll see that the commission estimates that fiscal year 13 revenues will total just under $34 billion, $33.990. That's growth of about $600 million over fiscal year 12. It's very close to what GOMB estimates, just put forth last week in the governor's budget. They're at $33,940, a difference of only $50 million. That's less than 0.1%. So again, everybody kind of sees the same things happening in the economy right now. Both forecasting groups have taken a fairly conservative approach in their view of fiscal year 13 revenues. On page 30, you'll see our 12 versus 13 estimate, and very quickly I'll go over some of the economic sources. Personal income tax, while estimated to grow only 1%, actually, and this gets back to that $500 million in timing, we do have a 3.1% base growth built into the estimate. However, because of that timing aspect, it actually ratchets down to only 1%. Corporate income tax, on the other hand, has a 2.4% base growth, but actually increases due to the change in the bonus depreciation from 12 to 13, even with being offset somewhat by the recently passed CME and NOL changes. The refund fund percentages, we are right now simply adopting those put forth in the budget book. It does have a net impact of reducing revenues in 13 by I think somewhere around $60 million or so. Sales tax growth is estimated to be 2.5%, reflecting a conservative view that essentially we're establishing a much higher base over the last couple of years. Continued growth of that magnitude will be harder and harder to get, so we're taking a conservative view on sales tax. And again, federal sources, we just take this right from the administration's proposed budget plan, has growth of 3.4%. A line-by-line detailed showing of the estimates for both COGFA and GOMB are on page 31. Again, not a lot of differences line-by-line. I'll make mention that the corporate income tax, while we're up about $100 million from their estimate, again, nothing to do with underlying base growth rates or anything. It's just that we're valuing the 3-year suspension of the net operating loss deduction a little bit higher than they are. Bottom line, a $50 million difference in the estimates for 13, so very close when you look at it in a $34 billion budget. Very quickly, page 32, just reflects the updated information the governor provided in his budget book last week. just shows their revenue estimate, projected spending, the operating surplus of $162 million, but still ending the year with a deficit of about $5 billion. To which then, of course, you have to add the, you know, $2 billion in Medicaid and $1.5 billion of group insurance and $500 million in refunds and to get up to that $8.5 billion. 33 is simply historical table. 34, I guess I'll throw out there one glimmer of hope. Page 34, at the very bottom, this chart shows where we were on June 30th in terms of general funds cash balance, and then also shows a balance after lapse period spending. And you can see that from fiscal year 10 to 11, we actually did improve somewhat from a negative $6 billion to a negative $4.5 billion. And what that means is, what a negative there means is, we had to spend $4.5 billion of this year's revenues to pay off last year's bills. So obviously not an optimal situation, but somewhat better than where we ended the year prior to that. 35 is historical stuff. And, you know, I think that we need to start mentioning here kind of the elephant in the room, page 36 and 37 in particular. This is our long-range estimate of what the value of the tax increase is. And as you can see in the transition years in fiscal year 15 and 16, we go from generating over $7 billion in tax increase due to the tax change to only about 2.8. That's a fall off of about $4.373 billion over that two-year period. So that's something always to keep in mind as we move forward in this tough budgetary climate. And that's all I have.
Questions, Representative Tryon and Representative Riley.
If you looked inside the budget that we have, and you had mentioned we used $6 billion worth of this year's money to pay off last year's bills, correct?
Four and a half billion,
okay. Then if you look inside the budget and you look at what percentage of our budget is debt service on, you know, paying off bonds that we had borrowed to make pension payments and paying off bonds that we might have borrowed to pay bills with in the past.
I'd have to
look at
calculate
it.
That, but we can get that for you.
I know there's $1 billion worth of payments for pensions, but it would seem to me like with the $6 billion in that and the unfunded actuarial liability we're paying for pensions, a substantial stake of our budget's going to pay off.
A large slice of pie, sure, certainly.
Would it be the largest amount of our budget? I mean, do we know what percentages is going?
No, I think that your human services would be larger. I'm not sure about education, but it would be a large slice. We can go ahead and calculate that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see what it is because if it's $4.5 billion unpaid, and I'm going to guess that it's somewhere close to $3 billion in debt service, and then you have the actuarially adjusted pension liability that we pay in addition to the normal costs, I would say it's a good size.
It's significant,
slice.
Yes.
Maybe it's $10 billion. I don't know.
No, there's something else. We'll get back to you.
Okay, I'd be curious to know what that number is.
Representative Riley.
You know, when you're going through some of the figures, you mentioned a figure of $50 million difference between the two estimates and how that sort of pales when you're talking about $33 billion. But when you get in those appropriations committees, $50 million, you know, can really be a lot. We talk about the impact of the increased pension costs. But, you know, how much is that? Well, I guess, you know, one may say that that's because of, you know, benefit changes and all of these types of things. How much is that of that is because the pool has significantly increased based on demographics? You know, you've got boomers retiring. You have people who maybe had an early retirement, which might have been based on a management decision. You know, all of these kinds of things, and and people are getting older and living longer. I mean, what's the impact of that more so than the perception of rich pension payments and increases and that type of thing?
I'm looking at our pension manager. Again, that's something we'll probably have to get back to you on if there's a way to calculate that or not.
Well, there'd have to be some kind of, you know, accounting for what the components of the increases are. You know, how much of it is because, you know, as I say, people are living longer, so they're on the pension longer, and the impact of boomers, which we know was a very large population group.
Most of the increase in the 2013 contribution is as a result of some pretty significant actuarial changes, mostly by the State University Retirement System. We can break that down for you, but that's...
All right. Are there any further questions? Yeah, we seem to have lost the crowd after the health insurance vote. This likely has far more severe consequences, but if there are no further questions, thank you very much, and the commission will now.
Thank you.